Hey, Glory here with Successful Marketing Group. As you know, I work with local businesses, and right now, I'd love your help in supporting local Twin Cities restaurants. This month, I'd like to spotlight Day by Day Cafe. They've been a St. Paul institution since 1980. My daughter and I have been going there for almost 20 years. They're family-owned and loved for their scratch kitchen breakfast and magical outdoor patio with koi pond. Oh, and their new wood-fired pizzas are a big hit. Go to my Instagram at Successful Biz Owners for more info on them.
Welcome to the post-draft edition of the Cheryl Reeve Show. I think we're going to do topics a little backwards today. Obviously, we're going to talk about the player you selected, but I'm actually interested in some of the other stuff. We'll get to Renee Davis here shortly, but I'm really interested, Cheryl, in the visit you got from Alex Rodriguez and Mark Lohr and how that went. You mentioned it last night on the press conference, but of course, you know, it's a press conference, so we didn't get too deeply into it. Can you tell me more what that was like?
Yeah, I appreciated having the opportunity. Mark and Alex were coming into town, and you know, the letter of intent had just been signed, and they flew in and had a full day plan. They were going to take in a Timberwolves game and meet some staff. And so obviously we had draft prep going on, and we invited Mark and Alex and his team into the draft room, and had some really good discussions, you know, around, you know, Mark just kind of looked at the board and, you know, had some observations, and, you know, I really tried to help our staff kind of get to know more about Mark and his background, his business background. Obviously they knew who Alex Rodriguez is. So, you know, didn't need a lot of introduction there. But we just exchanged ideas around best business practices in selecting people, and, you know, that there's parallels in sport and business, and, you know, A-Rod shared, you know, some stories, and Mark, you know, some business stories. He's one of the things I appreciate about him that I learned along the way was that, you know, he's into empowering women with regard to entrepreneurship. And we had a conversation around the challenges that women face with regard to getting venture capital to be able to be an entrepreneur. And he listed the reasons, and you would be shocked to know what they are. Men aren't as interested in what the women are doing. They don't know about maybe some of the businesses that women want to partake in. And so, it was the, you know, I said, oh, okay. So it sounds kind of similar as, you know, some of the challenges we face in sport, maybe in politics. And so this is all, you know, obviously it's all related. So we had some good stories there, and, we just wanted to kind of share with them a little bit too, just about, our staff that we formulated, why we formulated it, our ownership, what we've appreciated about Glenn Taylor's ownership of the Minnesota Lynx, how meaningful it is to us, how it empowers not just those that play for the Lynx, but the entire league and our fan bases. And you know, something simple as when you reference the Timberwolves, that the organization, it's Timberwolves and Lynx. Everywhere you walk through this building, I pointed out there would be a co-branding. You know, and again, anywhere you see a Wolves logo, you see a Lynx logo. And we talked a lot about what that meant to us in tangible things for them to understand, because I do think that's important. That's why we've been successful. And we've talked about the tangible ways that has led to our success. And I think it was illuminating, really, for both of us. And we enjoyed it. It was a nice little break from our draft meetings. And then got a note from Mark. He had followed along in the draft and enjoyed seeing where we landed.
By the way, it should be Lynx and Timberwolves, both alphabetically and in terms of championships.
Well, I'm not in that.
I'm not trying to get you to react. I'm just stating a fact. You don't have to comment. It's okay.
I don't want to have that awkward silence.
I can take this on myself. It's not an awkward silence. It's my awkward silence, not your awkward silence. A reminder, this is the Cheryl Reeve Show, my favorite show at TalkNorth.com. Follow us on Twitter at TalkNorthPod to see all of the shows, our outdoor shows and our sports shows as they are released. Go to TalkNorth.com to see all the shows we have. Added two new shows, or added one show, tweaked another. My show, Blocked and Muted with Jim Suhan. We've done a couple episodes where I hit my opinions on a lot of things happening in the sports world. And then I do an interview. Derek Falvey was my first guest. Nafisa Collier was kind enough to join me from France as my second guest. Please check that out. We've also added Lavelle Neal III, my old friend and newspaper comrade, who is now has joined Roy Smalley's Chin Music, is now Chin Music with Roy Smalley and Lavelle Neal. Our first episode is out, and it was a lot of fun. Thank you to everyone who has listened, everyone who has sponsored us, who has helped us continue to grow. Our sponsors for this show: Successful Marketing Group, Rudy Luther Toyota, and Cara Quinn of Vibe Realty. So now that you've had some time to digest, how do you feel about the way the draft went and your selection?
Yes. Yeah, and I do want to make sure we go into depth on that. In terms of the draft, you know, I think we had a pretty good mindset around this draft. We had just one pick, and anybody that we drafted, we felt like would be sort of, you know, a piece of the picture, maybe the final piece to the picture, as the off season would be coming to a close and then training camp would be starting, you know, just 10 days later. Anybody that we drafted was going to have to be probably more of a supporting role. And so we coming at it from that lens, it was one of those things that we felt like we could go in multiple directions. And I think a lot of teams felt that way. So it was really very, very interesting trying to get the intel, not so that you can make a move per se, but just so you knew, you know, kind of what was likely. And, you know, the draft played out in a way that was the more, I guess, unusual drafts that that we've had, you know, a lot more activity when a pick was announced, like reaction from people. Some were, you know, gasps of like, whoa, you're like, holy cow. Because the our mock draft, what we really try to do during the week is create every possible mock scenario, ones that are kind of out of this world, like not going to happen. And then you don't spend a lot of time there because you go, it's not going to happen. But you try to go, okay, we've got to be ready if this happens, if this happens, if this happens, because you don't want to make a decision in 4 minutes. You're trying to just simply execute. It's more about, you know, when you get to your 4 minutes, did anybody call you? You know, you give it a little bit of time. Is anybody ringing your phone? Is it a case of, you know, do we want to double check something before we actually hit unmute and make our selection? And so as the draft unfolded, suddenly we realized there was a scenario that was just simply not in our mocks. You know, not surprising that Ari would go number three. Okay. So maybe you had her slated at number four. Okay. So, you know, whether it's three, four, you had her at the top. You know, we didn't have, I think it was a surprise for all of us, the fourth pick, you know, a player that, you know, we all know about, we liked, but we didn't necessarily, whether it's because mock drafts repeated the same thing over and over and over again, a lot of teams weren't ready for that. And so it sort of created this interesting situation that as the selections moved on, you started kind of feeling like teams were going, okay, we didn't think Rinaia Davis was going to be there, but we've already decided a plan. And so that was hard for us too, because we spent the week in a different direction altogether. We had, you know, I told you three or four players. Rinaia was not in there. We had our order set. We had a plan. We actually had, you know, a trade scenario we were pursuing. And then all of a sudden it's just going to get blown out of the water. And you have to have the confidence, is what we tell, you know, our staff. We do the top 10. Not to just kind of say, hey, what do you think, you know, top 10, you know, kind of do it mindlessly. You have to be really sharp and focused on your list, because all you're doing on draft day is removing names. The top remaining name is your pick. That's the most beneficial way to do it, that you're taking the best player available. And so we got to that situation you know, like I said, after spending a whole week preparing in a different direction, it was hard. not hard to take Rinaia Davis. We were really excited about Rinaia Davis. But there were, you know, there were some plans in place that we had to undo. But all in all, you know, that was a long way to get to the answer that we're pretty excited about Rinaia. I really loved her reaction. you know, there were some players that fell lower than maybe what the mock drafts were showing, that had reactions that, you know, kind of, you know, I felt bad for the team that selected them. You know, Renaya knew, read, probably heard from her agent that she would go higher, and she didn't. And she didn't wallow in it. And she heard her name, and her family were pretty juiced up. It was fun to watch. And conversation with her went really, really well. Now, the other thing that we did in the draft, and had we come into another pick, we would have drafted Ashika Alexander, NAIA player out of Langston University, a historically black university. And we had made that decision, you know, a couple months back as we were, you know, you have to look at shaping your entire roster, including your training camp roster. And again, you know, these are things that become more clear to you the older you get, the more you look around and you see inequities and you want to be a part of solutions. And I said to our staff, I said, we are reserving a minimum of 2 spots for HBCU players. So bring me names, bring me prospects. And, you know, our group was pretty darn excited about that. And one of the prospects was Ashika. Now I had an inside connection with Elaine Powell, who played in the WNBA. I was a part of a coaching staff. And so I had the great fortune of being around her, and she's coaching that team. So we had a very easy connect and communication. And Ashika, we explained to her that if she were to go undrafted, that we wanted her to be in camp. And so we had that in place, and that's why we were able to announce that, you know, as quickly as we did. We thought it was important to do it on draft night because we want that awareness. We want people to understand that the inequities are everywhere and they're endless. And this is one way that I think all of us need to be more intentional because the fact is that, you know, rosters are largely set. You can have 15 in training camp. And so you're going to be waiving 4 players. And so if you're going to be waiving them anyway, why not create an opportunity for people that typically don't get them? And so that's what we were committed to in this training camp. And we're so excited to have Ashika. I know she's pretty darn excited too. So if she were to make our team or make a team, it would be the first first for Minnesota for sure. You know, we've had drafted HBCU players beyond rosters. It was largely earlier in the league, but she would have been the first undrafted to be on an opening day roster. So I'm not, you know, this is not a, hey, this is just a favor. We're going to look at her. Let's see how good she is. See how she stacks up. You know, we liked her on film you know, the value of this, for those that don't know, the importance of training camp invites, not just being drafted, but training camp invites, it changes your world when you try to play overseas. It increased your stock around the world. And so it's important that Ashika has that same benefit that, you know, other, you know, Power Five conferences, you know, the players that don't make a team would have. So we wanted to be a part of that. We wanted to, you know, move towards you know, just doing better for players that don't get enough opportunity.
That's so cool. I have a question about a player that you might have taken. I don't know if you'll be willing to answer or not, but I'm going to just throw it at you. We do want to thank our producer, Brandon Morton. Also thank, let you know that the best way to listen is to subscribe at your favorite podcast app. It's free, just an easy way to listen. Wherever you do listen to us, rate us, let us know how we're doing. Thank you for that again. And we want to thank our sponsor, Rudy Luther Toyota, which is sponsoring the Cheryl Reeve Show and other shows at TalkNorth.com.
Ready for a women-forward car dealership? Rudy Luther Toyota empowers their many women on staff in sales, management, and service. Whether you are looking for a new Toyota or pre-owned vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota has something for everyone. Every vehicle comes with a Luther Advantage. 10 cents off fuel and car wash discounts at holiday stations, Luther Advantage warranty, and 5-day return policy on pre-owned vehicles. Located just 5 minutes west of downtown Minneapolis, off 394 and General Mills Boulevard. And they're also hiring. Want to join the team but don't know where to start? Visit RudyLutherToyota.com today.
Also like to thank Cara Quinn. You can find her at CaraQuinnRealtor.com. It's CaraQuinn, realtor.com. She approaches her work as a real estate agent with passion, commitment, and integrity. She wants her clients to know that they have an advocate in their corner paying attention to every detail from the first phone call to the closing. Whether it's your first home purchase or you're empty nesters ready to downsize, she prides herself in ensuring that each client has a smooth and successful real estate transaction. We can vouch for Kara as a person. You can check her out. Check out her resume. She's done good work. She's worked in education. She's a good soul. If you need to sell a house or buy a house, I highly recommend CaraQuinnRealtor.com. Is there a possibility if she had fallen to you would have taken, and if Renia Davis hadn't been there, you would have taken Shyla Heal?
She was not in our consideration.
Okay. I was wrong.
She was a part of conversations. She did not make the final cut.
Got it.
And we felt like she was below, you know, Slocum, Evans, you know, those were players that we ultimately, after all the evaluation, we had her below those guys.
Got it. Okay. Were you surprised by just the way the draft went? I mean, you've kind of answered that already, but I'm just really interested that it seemed like everybody, both in the draft and outside the draft, was surprised by the way things went.
Yeah, I think if you look even in last year's draft, we were a part of creating the surprise. You know, mm-hmm. you know, Kiki wasn't in mocks. You know, maybe she was in the second round and we took her in the first. So I think every year you have at least one of those. I think that it happened in a lottery slot that maybe it created a little more buzz and things started a little bit earlier. And then I also think this is the hardest part, and I've tried to say this. Those that do mock drafts do not have all the information, and you're just basically going on statistics and, you know, watching video, watching games, you know, that's only part of it. And so, you know, what's happening on the inside, there's so much more, how interviews go, you know, the medical grades and, you know, things that you just, you know, you just can't know it. You can't know those things. And so I think that creates a little bit of what happened. I think you know, maybe the player that was, you know, darn surprising was Arela Garantis out of Rutgers. You know, I don't know the reasons. Again, that was a player we started to learn as we got closer to the draft that there was a possibility. So that did create discussions for us that if she were there, where does she fit? And so we had to make sure that we had that package fully vetted, you know, to make a decision if that presented itself. And it did. Arela was there when we picked, but again, on our board, Renia was you know, on the upper part of the board and was the top name remaining. So, you know, we had multiple players that we would have, you know, been happy to have, and we just didn't see that, you know, that kind of going that way. So I guess in some ways it was surprising, but you never really fully have it nailed down, even those of us in the business.
Right. I remember when I was covering the NFL, I had somebody who was a really good source of information for me. He was a general manager of a winning NFL franchise that I happened to get to know. And we were kind of trading information, what we were hearing around the league on before draft in the early 90s. And he said, you know, instead of playing games here, I'll just tell you what we have for our mock draft, what we think is going to happen. And he gave it to me for, you know, for the 32 picks in the first round. Zero ended up being right.
I know.
And, you know, it wasn't that he didn't know what he was doing. It's that one trade or one surprise pick early can shake up everything.
Yeah. And I think I kind of alluded to this in the pre-draft media avail that the other element is we know the condition of our team. We know what challenges we have, maybe physically with players, you know, that there's just information that not, you know, so we don't have that information on other teams. Other teams know far more about, you know, their needs. And I think that's probably part of the challenge, even for people that are, you know, in the league, entrenched in it, talking to people every day, you know, and also, I mean, talent is subjective a lot of times, you know, what you like or, you know, what you think would be best for your team. So I think that's the fun of it. I think that's what created the buzz, you know, was kind of the like, oh, my goodness, you know, how it was going.
If you or anybody you know would like to advertise with this show or the network, you can reach former Twins executive Karen Cleary at kcleary@talknorth.com, kcleary@talknorth.com. She will hook you up, and we would love to have you. So we both got our vaccinations. How you feeling?
Great. I'm just a couple hours removed from it, and I'm doing great no matter what. And I'm excited to have that, kind of milestone accomplished. And it'll be big for us during our season as we start to travel. I think all of us feel a little bit safer. And then as a group, if we're largely vaccinated, we'll get a chance to experience some benefits of some freedom that we would not have. So, yeah, it was a necessary milestone. And hope we can see the numbers continue to rise around or not only the country, but the world.
Yes. So you are loaded right now at the forward wing position. What do you see as your guard rotation at the moment, or does that have to play out?
No, I think that's pretty set. Yeah. As you said, I think it's, in terms of numbers, I've got more insurance and coverage on the right side of the roster than we do the left side, which will create us moving roster players from right to left. I don't know what we're going to call Ariel and Kayla, a two or a three. They're interchangeable. Mm-hmm. Good news is they each can play both positions. Ariel is also a willing initiator. So she's going to be covering, again, whatever you want to call her, as her and McBride play together. It's just going to be, matchups every night, which one's best. But in terms of roles in the offense, I just don't think it would be great to put numbers on him. Ariel's ability to go from three to two to one is going to be pretty valuable for this roster because we have Crystal and Rachel with the point guard duties now. Rachel has some ability to go 1-2. Renaya is going to have the ability to go a lot like Fee. And I'll get to learn more about what her comfort levels. We'll have those conversations. What does she really like to do? We have to teach her about the league and what shots you're going to get, how you're going to get them. I think she'd be a tremendous face-up four and be hard to play against once she adds the three ball, a consistent three mm-hmm. ball. So we're going to get her off the plane shooting the three. Mm-hmm. We're going to get her right to work on that. Because, it's a big difference with college and pros. In pros, all you do is work on your game. And so you can make improvement pretty quickly. We saw that when the FISA threw our training camp in her rookie year. The three ball wasn't smooth for her. But she ended up, being able to adjust pretty quickly and make a couple tweaks. And so we're confident, Renai didn't have a great three-point shooting season in her senior year, but she's above 30 as it is. Her free throw percentage is really good. So we think we're going to be able to move that needle. I mentioned Fee, as you guys know, 4-3. Bridget Carlton, who once again has come looking great and ready. I talked to her at the end of our season about the importance that it looked like we would be loaded on that side of the roster. At that time, we still had Kiki. And then I had asked her to think about being able to play the two. So increase your ball skills, your pick and roll game, your foot speed to defend in pick and roll versus twos. And so we're going to need her to slide that way as well. So, our philosophy was collect the good players. Not to say, if we didn't take Renaya, there was probably another one or two players that we would have liked that would have fit on the left side of the roster, which no matter which way we went, we were going to create a need to shift either left or right. And I'm excited. Just collect your good players, figure out how to put them in position to be successful. I think we did improve defensively and rebounding. And I think that was really important. And so now we just got to figure out how to get that that chemistry and playing together offensively.
How's Jess Shepherd doing and how does she fit in?
She's doing well. Knock on wood. I like where she's at. I think she would tell you she likes where she's at. But we haven't had training camp yet. It's a whole different beast. I have a feeling she's going to be just fine because I think training camp is not going to be of the traditional variety. We will not have practice players. And so the grind will be less because it has to be less. As we manage, just the tread, we don't have, people in game shape. So you got to be careful how you get there. But all that being said, I like where Jess is at and we are incredibly hopeful for her. And from watching her play, what her value is, when you have a big that can pass, especially with who we have on the perimeter with their, ability to play, down around in the post and also, on the perimeter. Jess is really, really valuable to us.
Next week, I want to talk about ESPN's coverage and Kathy Engelbert and how she handled everything. I thought it was a good production, but I also was disappointed they immediately flipped to NFL draft talk that is exactly the same that they have on every hour of every day. I think they could have done some more storytelling with the WNBA draft. We'll talk about that next week, though. For this week, I always want to give you an opportunity to talk about social justice. We have so much going on in Minnesota and across the country right now. Is there anything you'd like to address right now?
Yeah, I think you know, people ask me quite a bit this week around the Dante Wright situation and just how we're coping, you know, and what will we do for our players in terms of, you know, keeping them safe, et cetera. And, you know, I just ask for people to, you know, open their minds about, you know, this is what we say all the time. You know, we cannot deny that these things exist, the problems that we have in policing. It's so much greater than the notion of a bad apple. I don't think that the officer that was involved in this incident is a quote bad apple, you know, in terms of the terms that we've talked about before. But I think what it speaks to is just how I mean, the need, the pressing need for the culture of policing, the policies for a complete overhaul and analyzation of what we are doing and why we are doing it. One of the things I learned I think some people commenting, there was an officer commenting on it, their position about the traffic stop. The thing that the officer prefaced everything with was, we use traffic stops as a form of training. And if you think about that, that seems to be a situation waiting to turn bad. If the person is in training, they're clearly not experienced with it. Additionally, if you eliminate the traffic stops for a air freshener or expired registration, this officer suggested that there would be complete lawlessness. And I just think, what are our priorities? Because look at how many situations are escalated from a traffic stop, from something so minor that leads to the loss of life. And so we just have to rethink, you know, how we're doing things, the necessary change for, you know, these basic policies. And that's what's been on our mind this week.
It's amazing. You know, among financially stable democracies, they're probably like, what, 80 or 90 around the world, we put the most people in prison per capita.
Yep.
And by a wide margin, because it's profitable for people who run prisons.
That's exactly right.
We have the most guns per capita, again, by a huge margin over any of these other countries because of NRA lobbying and paying off politicians. We have the highest levels of interpersonal violence, people shooting each other and hurting each other. And we have the highest levels of police killing in the world. This is all tied together. It's all the glorification of guns. It's paying off politicians who will then support gun quote unquote freedoms, or will not react to somebody. You know, we had another mass shooting in Indiana. We've had how many school shootings in the United States? Why aren't certain politicians reacting to it? Because they're in bed with people who don't want them to react to it.
That's exactly right. And for Black men, to add to your statistics, mm-hmm. that the leading cause of death for Black men is police brutality.
Yep.
And that one in every 1,000 Black males will die at the hands of police. If that's not problematic. And so for those that want to spew the number that more white men are killed than Black, understand the ratios. It's 2.5 times more likely if you're Black for that to happen versus white. So it's not, this is like, it's like analytics in basketball. It's not a total number of rebounds. You know, per 40 is relevant. Your rebound rate is what's relevant. And so, you know, it's just interesting that there's just some people that don't want to want the world to change. You know, they want it to stay exactly as it is. And that's what we're fighting against. And I mean, you said all the other things. So it's just, it's endless. And, you know, it's like, here we go again. And it hasn't changed, you know, from Emmett Till, you know, in the 60s and, you know, lynchings in the early 80s. And, you know, so it's just, here we are in 2021, and this is the 2021 version of lynchings.
We could talk about this for hours. I think we will end the discussion there for today. We'll keep talking about these things because they're important. I appreciate Cheryl taking them on. Once again, thank you to everyone who listens. We really enjoyed the draft and talking about the draft. We'll get back to basketball topics next week. Thanks to Cheryl. Thanks to Brandon. And we will talk to you next week.